This is Jesus Shalom, a podcast about peace, spirituality, values, and activism from a Jesus-centered, world-embracing Shalom perspective. I'm Tim Peebles. One purpose of this podcast is to support lifelong learners in a welcoming environment for the well-being of the world. In other words, ours is a ministry of accompaniment for those on faith journeys. Such journeys, we believe, flow in two directions. On the one hand, our faith journeys within the household of Christianity, for those who have grown up in, or spent a fair bit of time in, a church context. They're familiar with and formed by the stories and symbols, narratives and rituals of Christianity. But they find themselves in a changing world in which that same Christianity has little positive to say. They have concerns, questions, and curiosities about whether Christianity can be renovated in a way that retains its Jesus center, but adopts a more positive engagement with regard to the cultural challenges of identity, spirituality, and ecology. On the other hand, there are some who have grown up or come of age outside any church environment. They perhaps had some limited exposure to church, but it hasn't formed their identity or community. For them, an embrace of the world comes naturally. It's part of a shared secular faith, an element of an activist orientation. Yet there's a spiritual component that might seem missing or undeveloped. And when engaged with Christian stories and symbols, rituals and narratives, their questions and curiosities are about whether that faith might be reconstructed in some way, outside of, and perhaps even in contrast to, traditional forms. So we have renovation and reconstruction, two journeys within a Jesus-centered and world-embracing Shalom perspective. Today I'm excited to say I've found two people, Maddie and Isabel, exploring these paths. And both have agreed to talk with me about this in real time, as it were. Last month we began our conversation with Maddie. Today we talk with Isabel. And in the coming months we'll check back in with one of them, from time to time, to talk about their faith questions, curiosities, and concerns. And maybe, not too much further into the year, we'll find others who'd like to join this conversation. For now, I hope you can find ways to connect with Isabel's story and enjoy my conversation with her. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. I always like to begin with my guests introducing themselves. I try to encourage folks to do this in a way that gets away from, oh, this is my job, and talks more about their relationships and interests and things like that, and then eventually circles around to their job. So, but you have freedom to do it however you like. How do you introduce yourself?
Okay. So, well, my name is Isabel. I was born and raised in Spain, and I've been living in the UK for the last 3 years and a half. I would say, since you've mentioned interests, like my main interests are on spirituality and feminism and anything to do with those two things. Like, and that can include languages, that can include women's rights, that can include like rituals and food, like that. Yeah, they're very broad topics, so all of that goes in there. I'm very passionate about, well, I'm currently training as a coach and as a doula, so all of that mixes into that as well. So bringing in women's rights and like accompanying people through important moments in their lives related to birth and death. And a coach, again, related to accompany people in important moments in their life with anything they might think, like, you know, I would like someone to talk to about this. So those are like the two things that I'm very focused on at the moment. And then, well, I'm a communications professional as well. Like, I work in communication, so I think that's me.
Great. Tell me a bit about your background. Your background, how you were raised, the kind of values and interests you had that were part of that background, and if any kind of religious, if there was any kind of religious component to that.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Roman Catholic Spain. and so my family is Roman Catholic. My dad's practicing. My mom is I like to say she's culturally Christian. Like, but my dad does go to church, and like his family has always been very religious, so that was a big part of my upbringing. I wouldn't say in a very sort of like literal way, as in there wasn't a lot of talk about like religion at home, but it was something that permeated a lot of things, both because of culture and because of my dad's faith. And yeah, I think the values, like, again, are a mix of like that like Spanish culture and my family culture and religion. So lots of like family is a massive value. It's funny, the one that comes to mind is like, you know, chastity and all that, which was also very big, like especially when we were becoming teenagers and growing up and stuff like that. My dad loves anything to do with like caring for the elders, and that is very present in his life. So that's something I think that I would say my sister and I have inherited, but I think I have inherited definitely. Yeah, so that's sort of like, and growing up, I used to think that they were very conservative and very authoritarian. I wouldn't say so anymore. I do think my parents have very conservative views on certain things. But I think within all of those conservative views, they've allowed us to explore the world in many ways. And then my dad would say, at the risk of us not choosing what they wanted us to choose, which has sort of happened.
So some of these values, like chastity and care for elders, would have been something that you just sort of absorbed both from church and from the wider culture. I mean, it sounds like there wasn't a clear line between those two.
Yeah, I don't think there was either, because I think at home, I think, yeah, like there's always this thing of like not having to say things verbally, but sort of like showing by example. So the like going to church or like the care for the elders, like it's not something that we were verbally or explicitly told. It was something that I think my parents were expecting us to pick up on just by looking at them. The thing that was very explicitly mentioned was the chastity thing, because of course they were like, I think they probably felt we needed the verbal, yeah, sort of like the verbal, not notice, but like, I don't know what you would say there, but like, yeah, we needed something verbal for us to listen to that message, because we couldn't see it in a way.
So out of all the values that are available, there was a fairly limited range of things that were explicitly named and taught.
Yes.
The rest was just assumed to be absorbed. What was the church part of that like? Was there a set of practices that you did as part of church?
So I used to go to Sunday service as a kid. And then when I was going to do my first communion, I took, I think what you would call an English Sunday school. So I would go to like, and then we had that course, but that was again, limited in time. Like that's something that we did because we had to for the first communion. And then that happened. And then the course that started later, started a few years later when we were preparing for confirmation.
Okay.
So I would say like the practice that was always there was Sunday service. But again, I grew up thinking, and I always use this as an anecdote. I grew up thinking that to go to church, I had to wear a skirt and nice clothing. Like there was nothing else around that. Like there was no explanation of faith. There was no, it was just like sort of like something important, and important meant having to dress up and modestly, because of course not showing the shoulders in church, not short skirts. And then the classes that we took for the first communion and then confirmation, I never thought they were delivered by people who were prepared to answer questions that people my generation would have. So I started, I always said I didn't want to get confirmed, but I did the classes anyway because I did want to go through the learning process. But then because I didn't feel they were taught by people who could answer the questions I wanted to answer, I stopped going to the classes as well.
Mm. What was the age for both of those?
So I did my first communion when I was 8 years old.
Okay.
And the confirmation in my hometown was at 18. That changes.
At 18?
18.
Oh, so yeah, by that point, you're a young adult.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not many deep faith questions probably emerge by 8, but by 18, yeah, there's an abundance of that. It sounds like your experience of church was largely a set of kind of a broad culture and set of practices, rituals, actions, without a lot of explicit teaching or conversation. And it sounds like almost no space for genuine exploration, questions, curiosities, and that kind of thing.
I can relate to that. I think Spain is this is a massive generalization.
Sure.
But like Christianity is in culture, like our year, and especially because I come from a fairly small town, a lot of the things we celebrate have to do with religion. So Easter is a massive thing. In September, we've got like the celebrations of three saints, or three, like Virgin, and then I don't know how you would say this in English, but like two versions of this, of Jesus, like two different saints, I think that would be. And it's all massive, but it's all just cultural, and it just happens.
Mm.
And yeah, we did have religion in school as well. And I had a couple of teachers that were very open to being asked questions. But that was in school. I think by and large, there was not a lot of space to have those conversations. I remember because my dad got really upset that I didn't get confirmed.
Mm.
And I sat him down at age 18 and I was like, well, you've never spoken to me about your faith. So I don't know what this means for you.
Mm.
I've grown up thinking that going, like, you know, being a Christian meant going to church and dressing up. And I don't want to be part of that.
Mm. So you've chose not to be confirmed. That suggests that you had questions or really oppositions almost that had developed before mm-hmm. those. What were some of those places where you felt resistance or questions that just went unattended?
Yeah. Well, I think my experience of church growing up has always been, or religion, like in that way, has been a platform to prohibit people from doing things.
Hmm.
But there was a lot of focus on sin and lots of focus on like confession, and it almost felt like a tool to make people afraid, and that just didn't resonate with me at all.
Mm.
So that was one. There was also the issue with like gender and women in church and hierarchy, which I know the Protestant church like is past that. Well, not past, but like it's done some advancements in that regard. Like women can get ordained and things like that, which the Catholic Church isn't even thinking about. Or perhaps Pope Francis is sort of like suggesting something. But in general, I think it's very unlikely that that will happen. And definitely when I was 18, that conversation was not on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, it's like it's just this feeling of like repression, you know, like... like restrictions and fairness.
So the positive elements, not elements you experienced as positive, but the things that Christianity advocated were forms of culture that you found to be conservative and itself restricted. And then those explicit teachings of Christianity sort of added a layer of opposition or mm-hmm. restraint or negativity about the world around you.
Yeah.
So you didn't get confirmed. What happened Next.
So I was massively angry with the church. I didn't want to see it at all. I didn't want anything to do with it. And then I moved to Madrid and spent a year living with nuns, and I got myself into a university that was run by priests.
So connect the dots for me there. You choose not to get confirmed, but then you move and live with nuns. Help me understand what's going on there.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a student hall run by nuns. I went to live with nuns because I think it sort of like creates a night, sort of like, what were you doing there? And in a way, again, it was my parents' choice because I thought that would be the best place where I could be my first year of university.
I see.
I was really angry with them, like really, really angry with them. But then in hindsight, like I finished that year being incredibly happy with their choice. And in a much better place to sort of like, yeah, in a much better place and in a place of gratitude for saying, you know, I'm happy I've had this experience. I still have a very good relationship with them. When every single time I go to Madrid, I go have a coffee with them. I think I learned a lot from them. It is true that after that year of living with them, I made the choice to move elsewhere. Mm. But I'm incredibly grateful that I spent that year with them.
So tell me about this year. What did that change your engagement with the church that you had in your background? I mean, you've living a year with nuns and a school run by a priest. Were they doing things any differently than what you had encountered in confirmation?
So I suppose, yeah, I suppose what happened is that I've always been very curious about spirituality and religion. So as much as I didn't want to see the church or I didn't want anything to do with it, I was always very ready to engage in conversation about it. Hmm. Even if at one point it was just to criticize it. That's very true.
How far back do you remember having that sense of being curious about spiritual things?
Very long, like perhaps I was like 14 when I asked. I kept on like raising my hand in religion class, and my dad's a teacher in high school. So I kept on being the pain in the ass and kept on asking questions. And the religion teacher went to my dad and said, your daughter asks so many questions because she's looking for God.
Mm.
I think I was around 14, 15 at that time. When my dad told me at that point, that comment made me so angry. Now I think it's so beautiful. Mm. But at that point I was like, why, like, who are you to make these assumptions about like what I'm looking for? Like,
how would you have described it differently at that time?
Well, I was angry with the church. I wasn't in looking for God mode. I was in like destroying your arguments mode.
I see.
So it was like I was in sort of like in a fighting,
yeah,
like position, not in a peaceful, oh, what is there position in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense. So back to the first year of university, living with the nuns.
Yeah. So I just found people who lived faith in a way that resonated with me way more than what I had seen until then. There were lots of those nuns who did have lots of conservative views, but there were some others, especially two of them, who didn't, and they were very happy to engage in conversations with us, with the students that lived there, very open to sort of like talk about like lots of topics. And mm-hmm. and yeah, it was very refreshing. Yeah. And also, I suppose it wasn't only like once I had rejected church in that way, I also started like going to retreats from other religions because I had rejected that, right? But I didn't want to reject spirituality as a whole. I started going like, okay, what else is there, right? If Christianity, if Catholicism doesn't work for me, then what else is there that perhaps can work for me?
So you sensed that there was something in Christianity, something in the church that pointed to some, I don't know what to call it, some dimension of experience, some aspect of reality called spirituality that was worth exploring in other venues. I mean, how would you describe, what did spirituality mean for you at that time?
To be honest, I don't know. I suppose. So this is interesting as well, because I think I've fought a lot with the word faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for a very long time, said that I didn't know what faith was. And it's a word that I sometimes still struggle with. So I think back then, it wasn't necessarily spirituality. I think that what I was telling myself was that it was an anthropological exercise, that I was interested in other cultures and specifically in religion. So I think thinking out loud, the word spirituality and like seeing it from the focus of like, you know, what else is there from a spiritual point of view comes in later. And before, like when I started the exploration, it was more about, you know, other cultures and other religions and, you know, other ways of living, but not necessarily from the focus of spirituality per se.
Yeah. And how was this received by your environment at that time?
My environment being my family?
Well, your family, I suppose, but I was thinking more of the nuns and the priest in that first year.
So the nuns and the priest were fine. The nuns were very open to sort of like me saying, oh, but like, you know, I've been to this Ayurveda retreat and like I've been to this Sufi retreat and all of that. They were very happy with me exploring all of that. The priest, the university was run by Jesuits, and the first year we had a compulsory module that was called History of World Religions.
Oh, okay.
So I was very pleased as well to sort of like not have Catholicism force fed to me. And I found the teacher that we had also very open-minded, and he was very open to sort of like listening to other experiences of faith and spirituality that had nothing to do with the institutional church per se.
Yeah.
My family didn't take it very well.
Yeah.
I remember one day they sat me down and they told me, you know, we've not raised your rights for so that now you convert to something else. And at that point I remember like going, well, I'm not saying I'm converting. I'm just saying I'm going to check this out.
Mm-hmm.
But it did create some friction.
Yeah.
And again, I think at that moment it made me really angry because I was like, you know, this makes no sense. Now I'm better able to see that they were coming from a place of fear.
Sure.
But I don't think that reaction was helpful for either of us.
Mm-hmm.
I did it anyway. That's true. but that was their reaction.
Yeah. I think the question of spirituality and the question of faith, those would be good topics for us to come back to explore later. Yeah. Have some thoughts on that, be curious what you think of that, but, let's stay with your story a bit longer. Mm-hmm. So you've started exploring other religions and other spiritualities in that first year of university. What mm-hmm. happens from there?
So what happens from there is that I attended a few Ayurveda retreats and I sort of like started following this guy who does Ayurveda and does retreats in Spain. And for a moment, like that was my spiritual practice in a way. It was very easy for me to sort of like go there because I had been practicing yoga for a while and I had always been interested in yoga. So those two things sort of like mixed fairly well.
Mm. So what kind of faith or religious tradition is that? Can you say a little bit more about what Ayurveda is?
So yeah, Ayurveda is like a sort of like traditional Indian like philosophy that has a lot to do with medicine. The man who ran this retreat has never mentioned anything about religion per se. He does speak about God and as the Father. But when I would ask him, like, you know, what religion is this? He would always say, like, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
Like he did use like meditation exercises and like yoga exercises and we did sing in Sanskrit or we prayed in Sanskrit. But I remember asking him like, you know, but what God are you talking about? And he would say like, doesn't matter.
Mm.
So there was a lot around medicine, food being medicine. So in this retreat, there was a lot of focus on food. It was always absolutely delicious. So yeah, that's something that happened.
We have some folks in our neighborhood that are part of a community that practices forms of meditation. And I was talking with one of them and just made the assumption that this was part of a Hindu kind of practice. And she corrected me. She said, our practice is rooted in a philosophy and a set of cultural practices that have been taken up in Hinduism, but we believe that they are earlier and more basic than Hinduism. And for her, Hinduism was a set of religious rituals and practices that were done in addition to meditation, yoga, and those sorts of things. And it was just interesting that that underlying philosophy still had what, from our Western point of view, would be a kind of theological framework. There was still an account of the universe and God or a kind of ultimate being of some sort, and a sense of what happens to us when we die. But all of this for her was a basic philosophy of life and an understanding of the way things are, into which she wants to live through her various practices. And this was not at all religious for her. So it was just a sort of striking conversation to realize that all the stuff you just said, I would typically assume to be part of a religion, but you don't count that as part of a religion at all. So we have to be aware that our Western sensibilities don't always translate so well, do they?
So
you had been doing some of that. Other practices alongside that or in addition?
I read a bit about Sufism and attended a Sufi retreat. That was just one day, but it was interesting, sort of like attend a dhikr. I'm probably mispronouncing it, but it was like a prayer. And I went to the Hare Krishna a few times in Madrid, and I ate with them and prayed with them. What else did I do? Went to a Buddhist meditation center a couple of times as well and listened to like a monk talking.
That's pretty significant range. What's the time frame?
All of that was probably throughout my first and second year of uni.
Okay. That's a lot to explore in just a couple of years.
I moved to Madrid and I was like, no, the world is here.
Yeah. What did you find in the exploration?
The thought that comes to mind when you ask that is that I was rejecting something to get myself into something that I also didn't know well. There were lots of questions about cultural appropriation, probably not with that phrasing back then, but sort of like, am I adopting something, you know, because it's cool, instead of like, you know, the conservative stuff that I've been raised with.
It's this exotic non-Western thing out there that it's kind of cool to connect with.
Yeah.
That's what you and mean then, by appropriation.
Yeah. And then I remember once, because we had this prayer in Sanskrit, right? And they gave us the translation. And I read it and I'm like, this is exactly the same like the Our Father, but in Sanskrit, right? And I remember very clearly thinking, you know, if I don't agree with the gender politics of the Catholic Church and seeing God as Father and all of that, then why am I accepting this in another platform? So then I quote unquote lost my faith in that journey as well, and I stopped going to the retreats.
So you stopped all of that spiritual exploration?
I think because I was trying to remember, like, I think for a year or so I did, or for probably longer than a year, I stopped all sorts of spiritual exploration. I the only thing that comes to mind is attending a church in Madrid that was English speaking. That even though it was a Catholic church, it was very different from the services were very different from the ones that I was used to, because there was a lot more around community, I felt, than there was in the church that I grew up with or grew up in. But yeah, I think for a few years, the interest in spirituality was latent, but I wasn't actively looking in a way. I kept on talking to priests and nuns, and my parents always tell me, you know, you always find hippie priests and hippie nuns, and you chat with them and stuff like that. So, which is true, but.
This podcast is brought to you by Anvil Trust, a charity that articulates, advocates, and advances Jesus Shalom in individual, interpersonal, social, political, and ecological life. To do this, Anvil shapes spiritually and theologically informed faith journeys through interpersonal accompaniment, facilitated conversations, and group presentations. Ways to connect with our Shalom work will be provided at the end of our show and in the show notes. For now, back to our conversation. So if I'm hearing you right, there were two main variables that that led you to sort of pull back from that spiritual questing. One was a concern about appropriation. And the other was what you now would call feminism, feminist values, recognition that the sort of dominance of masculine language, patriarchal structures, that wasn't just peculiar to the Catholic Church. It was found in these other spiritual communities as well. So did you identify yourself differently at that point in time? Or was it just you just stopped thinking about that stuff? And
so the point of identity is an interesting one, because I suppose I've always been culturally Christian. I've never stopped being culturally Christian. I remember, I can't exactly pinpoint when, but there was a moment in which I stopped saying anything about Catholicism relating to faith. Because I did have a very clear idea of, like, you know, I can be cultured Christian, but then Catholicism is something else. And yeah, I suppose that there wasn't a lot of difference in that. Because I've never sort of like had a strong Christian or Catholic identity. It's always been an opposition. So when that stopped, it's like there wasn't a re-identification to do in a way.
I was going to save this for when we came back to the faith question, but some years ago, I came across someone who was, I think it was sociology of religion. This is back in the 70s and 80s, they were working, and there was a distinction that sociologists use between extrinsic and intrinsic faith. Extrinsic faith is religion used to support something else that is taken as given. So in your case, we have this cultural arrangement, and religion is valuable only insofar as it is one more prop or one more endorsement of that arrangement. Intrinsic faith then is, in contrast, it gives a kind of autonomy and integrity to a faith perspective, that it has value on its own, independent of how it might match up with wider culture and so forth. There will always be some connections and correlations, but the intrinsic faith perspective is more a matter of identity in the way we typically think about it. We've internalized it and identified with it, and it has a kind of energy and autonomy for shaping how we engage life that is not reducible to conformity to external patterns along extrinsic lines. It sounds like that was never really part of your connection with church.
Well, it's interesting, because as you were saying that, I remembered there was a point as well, I think, whilst when I stopped all of this, that I think I started calling myself an agnostic. And I never called myself an atheist. But I do remember sort of like saying, well, I think I'm an agnostic, you know? And then I do remember very clearly as well, listening to a podcast or like something to someone on the radio saying, you know, there are two kinds of atheists, the atheist that wish God existed and the atheist that wish God didn't exist. And I remember listening to that and going, oh my God, I'm the kind of atheist slash agnostic that would love for God to exist, you know? Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that very clearly.
So in that sense, you internalized a kind of contrary perspective. Your identity became someone who was opposed, or at least had indifference or no clear position with regard to the church background you grew up with.
Yeah, I suppose when I left the fighting, I just was somewhat in peace, and I was like, you know, I don't have to fight against it, but I also don't have to identify with it.
Yeah, but at no point to this point in your story did you sort of identify as Christian beyond just being born into a culture that was deeply tied up with the Roman Catholic form of Christianity.
No. But then something very interesting happened, which was when I moved to London. I've only been to church twice in London. And there was something in me that really wanted to go not only to a Catholic church, but also like to a Catholic church run by Jesuits. And I had walked into Protestant churches before, like Anglican churches, and it just didn't feel the same. So the two times that I felt I wanted to walk into a temple, I looked for Catholic churches run by Jesuits, which was an interesting thing to do.
So fill out the context for me. So you've moved to London. Was that for work, for education?
That was to do my master's, so for education.
Okay. And as you're going about your educational work and living your life, you have this inclination that just shows up that says, I should check out a church while I'm here in London.
Yes, I think, yeah, that's probably it, I suppose. I don't know.
Nothing happened? No one said anything to you, or there wasn't?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I mean, you'd had this in your background, so it would be not entirely foreign thing to say, I wonder what it would be like to go to a Jesuit Catholic thing in a different culture.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, the reason that comes up right now, which I don't know if it was what was in my head back then, is being homesick. Because I think one day I specifically looked, I think it was around June, which is June, July, at the Corpus Christi. And I specifically said, I saw like a very sort of like small procession around where I lived in London. And I was like, you know, I should check this out. Like, what do people do here? So I went to Farm Street Church in Marylebone. And then a different day I went to this church in Tottenham that's also run by Jesuits.
And what was that experience like? Was it pretty similar to what you had growing up, or?
No, it was, I mean, I was really shocked because I was like, Isa, like you've spent so many years going, you know, I can be like culturally Christian, but like, I don't identify as Catholic. Then you sort of like find like, you know, peace in like, when you want that piece, or when you want to check something out, you're like, no, 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 I want to go to a Catholic church run by Jesuits. Like, so I suppose it's familiarity, right? And I mean, the difference, like the experiences were very different. Like the church in Marylebone, like it was a Sunday, so it's a fairly big service. But I remember checking their website, and Farm Street Church has lots of at least back then, they had like LGBT group, LGBTQ plus groups and stuff like that. So it's like, oh, these people are cool. So that sort of like also made me want to check them out, because I was like, you know, this is familiar but different. The church in Tottenham, I attended a very, very small service because it was a weekday. And I don't remember much about the service apart from the fact that the priest who delivered the service would switch sometimes to Spanish and Polish, especially when he was giving out communion. So he would say, I think in English the phrasing is the body of Christ. So he would say that in English, Spanish, or Polish, depending on the person who came. So I assume he knew the community and he knew who spoke what language. And I found that so beautiful.
Just those two visits, or did you keep going back?
Just those two visits. I think I returned to Firm Street Church once because they had a concert, but that wasn't a service per se. I also emailed the chaplaincy from the university where I studied, and that was SOAS. And the Christian group there. But then I've always been very reticent to sort of like groups that, you know, wax lyrical about Jesus. So when I got that impression, I was like, I don't think this is my place. So I didn't end up sort of like going to any meetings or anything, because, yeah, I just didn't feel, you know, like I was going to be comfortable in that setting.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that one of the things that made one of the churches you visited somewhat attractive was that they had a LGBTQ group. That suggests that I think for folks like myself who grew up in church, spent most of their life in church environments, we tend to see folks outside of church as not having our values. and it's difficult to see sometimes that not only do they not embrace our values, but they've developed a whole different set of values that are just as life forming and central to them as what we experience in the church. Ours are rooted in, oh, the Bible or Jesus or something like that, but other people outside of church have a different set of values. So I'm wondering, it sounds like you had a set of values that were kind of important to you that were shaping how you engaged with church, that kind of changed how you looked at church by this point in your life.
I'm not entirely sure I get where you're getting at.
Well, you've referred to feminism a couple mm-hmm. times, and how that shaped your engagement both with the church you grew up with and other spiritual traditions. Mm-hmm. LGBTQ, that suggests a set of values around, I don't know, inclusion or mm-hmm. justice. So it seems like some things were important for you at this point in time that probably did not emerge in church or spiritual context, but emerged someplace else. And I'm just wondering if you could speak about those a little bit. Where did those come from? How were they shaping you at this point in time?
Well, this is an interesting question, because I had a chat about this with my dad the other day, because he sees a lot of my values. Well, he saw, I think, I hope that's a past tense, a lot of my values as contradictory to what I had been taught at home. And I just don't think they are. I think a lot of the values that I hold very dear to me, which like justice, inclusion, equality, fairness, spirituality in a way, love, I was taught at home. And I think in a way the church I grew up with sort of like takes them, I don't like the word bastardizes them, but that's what it does. And then places them in a way that actually makes people feel excluded. And So I don't think, for me, that makes no sense. But I do think that a lot of those core values I was taught at home, just again, not explicitly. And then I took them and I was just trying to place them in my life in a way that made sense for me. Of course, I took the idea of love from my parents and the idea of equality. Like I was talking to him the other day, I'm like, what, like, are you saying having the value of equality and inclusion is contradictory to what you've taught me? Because I don't think it is. And he's like, I also have those values. And I'm like, then where is the contradiction? Right? And he's like, you know, but like you think, and I'm like, yeah, those are specific topics. I've just taken those values and placed them and made sense of them in a way that has worked for me.
Mm.
But those values, in essence, I got from you as well.
Mm.
I suppose it's not easy as a father to hear that.
Well, I mean, it sounds like the religious environment you grew up in, there wasn't a lot of reflection and conversation connecting the dots between various
yeah.
things. And so things that probably seemed natural and normal and just obvious to your family, mm-hmm. In your experience, they start moving apart. And the values that were in that mix start taking on a life of their own and kind of stand on their own independent of the religious framework that was around them.
Yeah. Like I remember having conversations because I had a friend who identified as queer and they were very religious as well. And I kept on thinking, like, are you telling me that their love is not going to be okay in church? And for me, that was very shocking because I'm like, if the church is preaching love, then why are they then putting a hierarchy on love?
Mm.
Why are they saying some kinds of love are like valid and some others are not in the eyes of God? It just didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is way more recent because this is a conversation that I had with a friend the other day. Who told me, you know, I'm not used to encountering religious people with inclusive values on gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of said, like, you know, if in my point of view, like, I think if religion doesn't help you love more and love better, then there is something very wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using your religion to hate anything or anybody, then I don't know. That's a kind of sort of like view and religion that I do not want to identify with.
Yeah. So let's go back to your journey a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just touched on a number of things that I think we can come back to and have further conversation
yeah.
about, but we have a little bit more of your story that brings us up to the current moment.
Mm-hmm.
Fill in that gap for us a little bit. So you visit a couple churches, you're in graduate
mm-hmm.
programs, you're identifying as agnostic.
And then I met a colleague who was very interested in spirituality and started talking to him a lot. And we would use like a few minutes before meetings and after meetings to sort of like check up on, you know, spiritual journeys and stuff like that. And he is also a Christian. And at one point he mentioned workshop. He mentioned not Anvil, but he mentioned workshop. Like he mentioned that he had done workshop. I don't know if we need to give the context of what workshop and Anvil is, I suppose.
Well, workshop is a sort of legacy behind the Jesus Shalom podcast. It was a program of applied theology for everyday folks, people who were working outside of church but needed further education to do house church, organic church, and things like that. And so ran for about 30 years, over 5,000 people were part of it. And it sounds like this friend of yours was one of those people.
Yeah. And he said, you know, you're going to love it. And then I checked online and there was lots of content, but there was nothing happening per se.
Yeah.
So then I rang Anvil and I spoke to Noel. And it was really funny because I remember him saying, you know, I'm the founder. And I was like, well, I'm sure, like, that's great. And then we exchanged email addresses and like, yeah, like I suppose that opened again the doors of like, you know, what's behind Christianity. And that opened those doors in a way that made me actively interested in what Christianity had to offer from a place of peace and not fight, which was very refreshing for me. Because I forgot to mention, I went to Tessé as well whilst I was in Madrid. Tessé is a community in France for a week. So you can imagine my mom, like when I went to Tessé with like priests and nuns and religious students, and she was like, "You've always criticized the church. Why are you going now with like 50 religious people to a religious community?" And I absolutely loved the experience. So
tell me a bit about Noel, my partner in the podcast, the founder of Workshop. You had this conversation with him. What did you hear in that conversation and in looking at workshop material and things like that? What did you see there that seemed attractive or interesting or piqued your curiosity?
Well, the word that comes to mind is openness. Mm. And I think the content that I saw on the website, on the workshop websites, covered a lot of things. And a lot of things that were important to me at the time, like especially related to gender and sexuality, that aren't usually covered in religious settings, at least in my experience. But also, so that was online when I was doing the reading online and checking the website. But then there is something very special about the way Noel speaks and the way he transmits his message, mm-hmm. or what he has to say. And I found that very compelling. Like I remember the first Skype conversation we had. It was really motivating. And it was motivating in a way that like fueled exploration in a very healthy way. Mm-hmm. Like there was always room for questions. There is no topic that sounds taboo and stuff like that. So I think all of that made me go, you know, like I do want to keep in touch with them, that's for sure. And also sort of like keep on exploring this. And also I think that door opened a way to, in a way, understand my dad better. Because I felt, you know, if I understand Christianity, well, okay. To be honest, at first, I wanted to destroy his arguments from inside. Okay. Sure. To tell the, like, truth be told. But then that turned into, like, you know, a way of, like, you know, understanding where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And I suppose that happened when I realized that regardless of what I said, from whatever perspective I was going to say it, he was going to stand his ground, regardless of like me using the Bible verses to like contradict him. That was of no use.
Yeah, that's a helpful thing to hear and to be reminded of. When we describe the kinds of faith journeys that we want to accompany and encourage as being ones of renovation for folks who have identified with church, have identified as Christian, have spent significant time and formation in church environments. So renovation and then reconstruction, which is for folks who have never really identified with church, have limited experience of that, have positively engaged developments in the modern world, but still are looking for sort of a faith connection with that. And it's not always entirely clear to me how those two conversations kind of coexist. And in some cases, for some individuals, they're just very different conversations. But I think even when we're engaged in a kind of reconstruction faith journey, a kind of starting from scratch, many folks who would identify with that approach do have, like yourself, have families who are on the other side of that line, who are still part of the church. And so being able to have a kind of renovation kind of conversation with them, mm-hmm. where you can understand what faith looks like from their point of view, you can offer alternatives to that, but those alternatives to be genuine have to have some connection with what matters to them and how they see things. And so even if we're on that reconstruction path, we have to be able in some ways to sort of step on the other side of the line and have conversations over there.
Instead of just wanting and go, you know, I'm going to prove you wrong with your own arguments. I don't think that's very helpful.
Well, that brings you to how I got connected with you. I got to know you through Noel. And in our various conversations, we got to this point of thinking that maybe it would be good to share some of this conversational journey in real time so that other people can listen in. And so this is the first of what we imagine to be an open-ended conversation where we're exploring questions, concerns, curiosities that you have together as you look at what is this Jesus-centered, world-embracing, shalom faith perspective that we talk about. I'm wondering if we could just finish here by you just naming some of the questions or topics or things that are front and center for you in that exploration.
Well, the first that comes to mind, which I think links to what we've just talked about, is what it means to be a Christian. And I know the easy answer, or the easier answer, is like, you know, someone who follows Jesus, which was the answer my grandmother gave me 2 days ago as well. But it's not very clear to me what that means, because a lot of people with very different views about the world call themselves Christian, right? And I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. Perhaps there is no answer to the question. I think the journey of trying to answer it will be interesting. There are lots of questions about, I suppose, gender and like the divine feminine and like the role of femininity in religion and spirituality. There are questions around like how to using someone else's phrasing from one of our meetings, like how to live life in a spiritual way, like how to make life a spiritual practice instead of, you know, having our spiritual practice and then doing our life and having those two things unconnected.
So integrating spiritual practice with everyday life.
There are questions of identification and what happens when you don't identify with something, and how you create community because of an identification, and how you don't create it because you don't have one, and what happens with those dynamics. There are questions of love and faith and whether that's any different. I think those are the topics that come to mind. I'm sure there are more, but like those are.
Well, that's a very good place to start. In the faith community that I come out of, for a while there was talk of Christianity being a matter of believing, behaving, and belonging. And one person actually added beholding as well, which is kind of an interesting mix. But I hear bits and pieces of all four of those in the questions and curiosities you have.
Well, I suppose it's to simplify it, it's just life. But
well, that's right. I mean, none of these four are separable from one another. They tend to bleed together, especially with regard to spiritual and religious practice. And so, it's not like we're going to be able to separate them and talk about them independent of one another. They will move into each of those other domains. But which one you start with, or how you approach it, that can be different. So, well, it's been great to hear the story of your life to this point and how it sort of connected with us and some of the topics we can explore more fully in ongoing conversation. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
A special thanks to Sarah Baker, who composed and recorded the original music you've heard throughout this episode. And thanks to Isabel for sharing some of her life story with us. and thank you for listening to our conversation. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please share this with your friends, review us in iTunes, and visit our website at jesus-shalom.org, where you can leave questions, comments, and suggestions, and sign up for our mailing list. Even better, you can upgrade to becoming a partner of the podcast for £5 a month, support we need to keep this podcast afloat. If you'd like to connect with the wider work of Anvil Trust, you can visit us at anvil.org.uk and join our newsletter list there. That's all for now. Deep shalom to each of you.